So if you didn't get a lesson, we're pretty much just following the lesson sheet. So if you want, there's three extras up here. So tonight we'll be talking about Abraham and Sarah, and the kind of theme we'll be talking about is trusting in the promises. So to kind of begin with, we'll just have a review of Abraham's life. So just let me know what we already know about Abraham. You can just throw it out there out right on the board.
He almost sacrificed his son.
Yeah.
Went to a land that he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
God blesses him and says, I'll make of you a great nation, and I will make your name.
All right. So along with that, there's promises. You know, there's three typical promises that kind of stay with him. You know what those three are? You know, we kind of say
land,
nation, seed. Yeah. And there's also other promises that he's promised, like the blessings and that. Yeah, who's everyone that he took with to the promised land?
His whole household.
Yeah.
Including his nephew's Lot.
Yeah, Lot went with him. And then what did Abraham live in while he was in?
Tents.
And where did Lot live?
Sodom.
And then, were there any occasions where he feared for his life? Might have told a liar. Maybe there's two.
Yeah,
he went to Egypt, and there's another one.
Abimelech.
What was that?
Abimelech.
Yeah, Abimelech, Egypt and Abimelech. Lied about Sarah. You know, to kind of, just said he feared for his life. So these are all things that I kind of said that we have kind of went through that will kind of be important as we go through the lesson today. So just to review, we'll talk about the unseen and seen. Yeah, this is Hebrews 1:1. These are slides that I took from Marty's PowerPoint the first time, or the first class. And it says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Now faith is the assurance, or the giving substance to of things hoped for, or expected, the conviction, or test of things not seen. And one more. Now faith is the assurance, you know, the title or deed, the confirmation of things hoped for, divinely granted, and the evidence of things not seen. The convictions of their reality faith comprehends as fact, but cannot be experienced by the physical senses. So just kind of relating the faith to the unseen, that, you know, our faith brings to reality what is unseen. And we'll see that a lot as we go through Abraham's life, that the unseen things. And these are kind of the themes that we went through about the unseen, but the unseen is superior to the seen, and there's promises there, which is the unseen that we'll be talking about. And then the trust faith that we've talked about already is the ability to see the unseen. Again, our faith makes reality what is unseen. And we are always in danger of losing sight or shrinking back of the unseen. We already mentioned there's a few times in Abraham's life where that has happened. Thank God provided a testimony that seeing the unseen is a superior way to live. You know, it says that they're witnesses for us. And we kind of have this thing where, you know, in the world today, we say maybe the seen things are what's most important, but by faith to understand that the world, we're made by the world of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. So we kind of see that, you know, it's the invisible things that are more important than the invisible, the unseen, more important than the seen things. That the unseen is what creates the seen. And then our objectives for this class is to list the unseen things that we see in Abraham's life, and to recognize how that affects how they acted, and then know how our lives can relate to Abraham and Sarah, and then list the unseen things in our life. So starting, so starting in verse 8, I kind of titled this, Abraham Answers the Call of God. So if someone just wants to read verse 8 there real quick, of Hebrews 11.
By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going.
So it was the unseen in this instance to Abraham.
His destination.
Yeah. This land that was promised that was unseen. Or this inheritance that he had that says he went out without knowing where he was going. And then what actions did this cause him to do to the unseen?
He obeyed.
Yeah, he obeyed. He obeyed God's calling and went out. So what were some of the promises that he had that we already mentioned? It said the promise or the inheritance. What was that?
It said he was going to receive the place of inheritance.
Yeah. And then we also mentioned the land, nation, and seed promise. Now, how many times was he told of these promises he would receive? Reading through it, I counted 13 different times where it talks different statements, but it mentions that God's going to either give him something, provide him something, so how do you think hearing these promises helped Abraham in the actions that he took?
Helped to build his faith.
Yeah.
For him to really trust God.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be easier to believe something that you can't see if you're told it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like God repeats the promises to Abraham at kind of crucial points in his life. Where he's either already showing evidence that he's starting to doubt, or it's been a while since he made the promise and Abraham is just not sure it's going to happen. I think that probably that repetition helped.
Is there a key verse that maybe is repeated throughout the Bible that we hear about of Abraham?
Children of Abraham.
He believed God and was counted as righteous.
Yes, yeah. So it said he believed in God and counted him as righteousness. And that was right after God had just told him a promise. Just repeated the promise of thing that he said, as the stars, so will your descendants be. So what were some seen things that could have stood in his way? You know, from going to the land.
Well, his age, for one.
Yeah.
The distance.
Distance, yeah.
And he lived in Ur. It was a city. And a city versus the desert.
Yeah.
He had a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had friends and family.
Yeah, friends and family. Yeah, so there was a lot of things that could have been holding him back, but he answered God's call anyways because he believed in the promises that God gave him, And he went anyways. So kind of going to this next section, that Abraham living for God. And if someone just wants to read 9 through 10 there.
By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise, for he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God.
So what was the unseen here? Yeah, the city of God that God built, that he went. And then what was the action that he took because of this unseen thing?
He lived in tents, temporary dwellings.
Yeah. He lived as an alien, you know, still searching for the city. Even in this land that he was still promised, he was still looking for something better, the city of God, and living in tents.
A land which had cities in it already.
Yeah. And there's some better city that, better because God is the builder.
And he never owned any of it.
Yeah.
He had to buy the place to bury his wife.
Yeah. What did Abraham do repeatedly while in the promised land?
He worshipped God.
Yeah.
There's many references to him, many times, building an altar.
Yeah. Yeah, there was building an altar, or going back to the altars he already built and calling on the name of the Lord. We also see him staying true to the covenant that he made with God and the circumcision, you know, circumcising his whole family, even and remembering that and circumcising Isaac. So we see him, trusting in God and still calling on him. So how do you think this helped him live as an alien? I guess calling on God and remembering God, how do you think that helped him live as an alien in this land?
Well, if he was looking for a city whose architect and builder is God, then drawing closer to God would emphasize the reality of that city. Mm-hmm. Building the relationship with God builds the faith in the permanent dwelling that he has not yet reached.
Yeah.
He also was living in a way and worshiping a God that was completely different from the people that, you know, were around mm-hmm. him in Canaan. So that kind of emphasized the difference between him and them.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a foreigner, he was alien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe the most concrete way that this gets manifested in the story of Abraham is in the decision between he and Lot about who goes where in the land, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lot is the one who's given his sort of free choice
yeah.
and moves near to, you know, Sodom, right? You know, the sort of corrupted city there, while Abraham turns and goes off in the opposite direction with his tents and lives in the more open areas. So maybe that's kind of it's an interesting story because it seems like it's just kind of a matter of, you know, working out a dispute between two parties, but there's some kind of maybe spiritual lesson underneath that we don't get without reading Hebrews.
Yeah. So the next leads into the next section, our question. What are some differences between Abraham and Lot while in Canaan?
So I would just, I don't know what you're going to relate to that point and maybe Mason's point. If you're looking for something else, it lessens your interest in what's present.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have been attracted to what's present, as honestly Lot was.
Yeah.
But if it's not what you're looking for, you know that already, and then somebody else pointed out a different God, that would be just lessen the attraction. Or the wealth, or the politics, or whatever might have been the attraction of the land.
And looking for something else because it's better than what you knew in Canaan. So then, getting this question, what some differences between Lot and Abraham that we see throughout the story?
I think spiritual vision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lot was looking toward the physical.
Yeah.
Which was the opposite of what Abraham was looking for.
Yeah.
Lot really wasn't living as an alien or a stranger there. I mean, when the angels, I think it was, you know, come to him in Sodom, like, he's all, you know, engrossed and assimilated into the culture there.
Mm-hmm.
And Abraham continues to live as an alien and foreigner.
Yeah. He chose to settle in Sodom while Abraham chose the incense. Do you think there's a difference in how Abraham and Lot raised their children?
I think it's interesting to note that when Abraham left Ur, he left with his father.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Heber was his dad. So Heber, Abraham, Lot, Sarah, and Lot's wife all moved out of the city of Ur. And it was after Heber's death that Abraham and Lot moved into the Promised Land. And it's kind of this interesting thing in as much as there's almost this sort of theme where, you know, there's the godly father and the godly son. And we know Abraham had other brothers and sisters, but nobody went with him. And it's almost kind of like the story is continuing, where there's this young man, Lot, who is sort of Abraham's responsibility. But, you know, the son doesn't necessarily follow in the ways of the father.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Heber's children didn't follow in the same ways Abraham went. So kind of this interesting concept of, you know, some children do whatever they want, other children, you know, stay on the straight and narrow. I mean, Cain and Abel's the same story, you know, all that.
Yeah, we see that throughout Israel.
For all the patriarchs, actually, there's a kind of a litmus test for righteousness, which is, where do you go to get a wife?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So Abraham sends back to his country. Lot doesn't do that for his daughters. And you see that again in Jacob and Esau, and you see it again in the Israelites, you know, marrying foreign wives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big part of how they raise their children.
Yeah.
Or as an indicator of that, I should say.
I think there's something interesting, though, about Lot. So this is almost sounding Abraham's righteous Lot. You know, he's fallen off. But Peter describes him, 2 Peter, as being a righteous Lot, how distressed he was, where he lived, the things that he saw.
Yeah.
But there's still somehow, in the midst of that, he's not conducting himself quite the same as Abraham. And I think it's maybe an even greater warning from Lot's side of, you can be in the midst of these things and be disturbed by them, but be more influenced by it than you may recognize.
Mm-hmm. I think that the mindset of establishing ourselves either in Sodom or living in tents, you know. And then on this question of how they raise their children, I think we see Lot's kids sin against him in the story where his daughters, you know, get him drunk and then go in and have relations with him. And then we see this incident or in the occasion where the three men come, you know, and they say, you know, get out, get ready. The Psalm's going to be destroyed. Lot goes to his kids, his son-in-laws, and say, you know, it's coming, get ready, we need to leave. You know, they kind of laugh it off. You know, I don't think they're, you know, Lot's not teaching him to be prepared. He kind of talked about, Lot sees it, but, you know, maybe he didn't go to his kids about it. His kids didn't see it, but maybe Lot did. I think in a difference we see, like we mentioned, Abraham finding a wife in his home country, not Canaan. I think there's something in that Isaac followed Abraham to be offered. I think Abraham instilled in his child that the reverence of God, that he would follow Abraham to be offered. Did they both offer their kids? Do we see Lot offer his kids and a story to something.
One was carnal and one was spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well,
Lot offered his, offered his daughters to them.
To sin. So the men were coming and wanted the men of Sodom wanted the men of God all in the city. And Lot offered his daughters to them and sin, while Abraham, we see, offered Isaac to God. I think we already talked about it a little, but what are the importance of Abraham living in a tent? We kind of mentioned this already.
A few minutes ago when you said, what did Abraham give up when he left? You know, my thought was his home and his security. Mm-hmm. But all through this lesson I've been seeing, he didn't give up his security. His mm-hmm. security was just somewhere else. You know, we think of our physical house as our... the most secure place mm-hmm. it can be, and all through this, you know, him living in a tent, it doesn't protect against weather all the time. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's not stable, it's not secure, but he had his security.
What are some steep things that could have stood in his way, or maybe did stand in his way? I'm thinking of the last part, did stand in his way. I have to read my mind here a little.
Well, the sheer distance is hard. I mean, we're past the point about him being there, but that was a long way to go. Mm-hmm. Walking steps.
Mm-hmm.
The fear of the people around him. And there was the points, I don't know if this is what you're thinking, but you know, when he was afraid that they were going to kill him because of Sarah. So that was a stumbling block for him.
And I think when we first see the instances where he lies to Sarah about the fear of his life, and then when we go back and read the very first time Abraham hears the promises of God, right at the end there it says, God will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse Abraham. And we don't see him trusting in that promise. We see him lying, being fearful of his life. And then going into this next one, where Sarah trusting in God's promises. So if someone wants to read 11 and 12.
By faith, even Sarah herself, when she was unable to have children, received the power to conceive offspring, even though she was past the age, since she considered that the one who had promised was faithful. Therefore, from one man, in fact, from one as good as dead, came offspring as numerous as the stars of the sky and as innumerable as the grains of sand along the seashore.
So it was the unseen to Sarah in this.
Offspring.
Yeah, the ability to give even beyond her, or to conceive even beyond her years. And what action did she take, and what was she able to do because of that action? Yeah, she believed in the promise. And because of that, she was able to conceive. God gave her that ability. Because she considered him faithful who had promised.
So she had some trouble believing, or at least she may not have, maybe she believed, but she didn't understand how it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't believe that it necessarily would happen through, you know, her body at first.
Yeah.
So there was some challenge and doubt there too.
Yeah, she was looking to this theme at that instance, saying, I'm too old. I need to use my maid servant to go along with God's promise. And how many times did Sarah and Abraham hear about the promise of a son? So I kind of three where it mentions the son but then we also count of mentioning of descendants. So if you add those in there, now I had it hearing and knowing about these promises, help her faith, kind of a repeated question of the last section. But how do you think this helped her faith to hear it? Hey, that reputation again.
And just a reminder. God hasn't forgotten about the promises still.
Yeah, he's still faithful to.
And the additional detail that's kind of offered each time, as you mentioned, it starts as this generic promise of descendants.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a son is promised, and then later Abraham says, well, okay, well, what about my servant? Should we just use him? And God says, no, it's going to be through your body, through your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very specific promise that includes a time when the angels or whoever they were visiting. So adding detail each time, I think it's a great way to build someone's faith, because now I have just a little bit more solid facts, you know, to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
You see a similar pattern in the development of the messianic promise through the Old Testament. More and more detail is added, it gets easier and easier to believe that it's really going to take place.
Okay. Yeah.
I think if I, like, thinking about how I've looked at Sarah in the past, if I just read the Genesis account, I don't get the picture of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah. Like, everything that she does seems like she's laughing, and she thinks she gives a different servant to Abraham. She laughs at the men of God. She basically just seems very disbelieving. So I don't get that picture of faith. So I like reading the Hebrews account to show that, like, yes, maybe these were her outward reactions, but internally she held on to that belief. Held on to that faith, despite all of her disbelief at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe it's okay to have a little bit of that questioning
mm-hmm.
when you're not quite sure that the promises are true. I don't know. It happens, yeah.
what do you think the turning point in Sarah was, where we kind of see her story and we see how we read of her in Hebrews? And maybe I'm implying something. But, isn't she called out by God? She's kind of doing this laughing in secret. But God says, why are you laughing? And then we see a verse that says, is anything too difficult for the Lord? I would say that would be a turning point for me, to be called out for doing something in secret and having God call you out about it. I think, you know, right then, you know, we mentioned repeating of a promise, but God talking to you about a promise, saying you don't believe in me, that I can do this. I think that might have been a turning point where we see Sarah start to believe a bit more.
And 1 Peter 3:6 says, and Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So that means he asked her to do things that she didn't want to do, but
mm-hmm.
leaving the house, she did them.
Yeah, I think we see, I don't think Abraham kept all these promises to himself. You think he shared them with Sarah? I think we see there's a relationship between Sarah and Abraham, and them partaking in God's promises. And
she's a great partner in
his
obedience.
Trusting in Abraham enough, who trusted God to follow and believe in him.
Yeah, just that. I mean, she had to participate in the obedience to God's commands and the faith in these promises
mm-hmm.
in a very similar way that Abraham did. I mean, she had to go live in tents and travel a long distance and live as a foreigner, like just like he did.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that in obedience to Abraham and to God.
Mm-hmm. So what are some seen things that could have stood in her and Abraham's way?
Their age.
Hardships
of living in a desert and moving to where the water is.
Yeah.
That would just, that'd be tough.
Yeah.
How long they had to wait after the promises?
Time.
They were already old when it started, and then God makes them wait another, 20 years or something?
75 to 90.
Yeah, 15.
Well, 25 for her. For
oh,
her.
I see.
That's right.
You had to wait longer.
And then they try to do God's promise in a different way. Yeah. Who are we to, you know, go through with God's promises? We should be.
So maybe that's, that might be your other point about being called out. These corrective events, right? The thing with Hagar did not work out. But and I think there may be, maybe in our lives when we do these kinds of things that look like doubt or that maybe we get a lesson out of it if we can learn from those, either because God or somebody calls us out or because it doesn't work out very well, we say, okay, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And then, did he stand in God's will? No, very solid. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? And then the next two verses, the Abraham staying faithful when tested. So someone wanted to read 17 through 19. Yeah.
By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death.
So what was the unseen here?
He couldn't see how the promise was going to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
He was going to kill Isaac.
And he believed.
It would happen anyway, somehow.
Yeah. Him believing in the unseen, believing in that he would be raised again. And what action did he take because of this?
Obedience.
So how was he tested? I think it's kind of obvious. But maybe I'm looking into it more.
He says it as if Isaac were dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's two. I mean, killing your son stinks because you're killing your son.
Yeah.
And killing your son in his situation stinks because you might think that you're killing the opportunity for the promise to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
So it's a double. Maybe there at least.
I think, you know, he could have had the mindset of how am I going to work out God's promise if I'm killing my son? You know, I'm supposed to have my descendants through. You know, but he didn't have that. He's trusted in God.
Well, and also they have waited so long for Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then if I do this, how long is it going to be again before something else?
I like the way he didn't waver from the comment. God said it would be Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
I just based on that he had been specified. And so that's a tremendous amount of faith to conclude he would raise him from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that had ever happened. But for God to be consistent with both, I have to kill Isaac, but Isaac will be the source of the fulfillment of his promise. What other conclusion can you reach but that? Put all the evidence together, and that's his conclusion. And he was confident in it because there was no other way that he could see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also he was given this gift of a son, and he didn't put that gift in front of God. You know, I think it's a challenge, you know, thinking about my son, putting God asking me to mm-hmm. sacrifice him. Would I choose God over my son at that point?
Yeah,
I think that's a huge test.
Mm-hmm. So then, why did he offer Isaac? Why did he end up offering? There's a verse in Genesis that I'm thinking of. That's on your lesson sheet if you want to turn it in. God says something of him. Said, now that I know that you're God. So how does fear of God play a role in our faith?
Always in control.
Mm-hmm.
What he promises is true.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, it's like kind of like fear and respect for his power. So like Abraham was able to do this, reasoning that God would bring him back from the dead. Like, so it's easier to obey God when you know how powerful he is.
Right, and after all, God essentially already had brought Isaac from the dead. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the significance of the language back in verse 12, born of one man, and him as good as dead. Mm-hmm. Right? In some ways, God had already done it for Isaac. No reason he couldn't do it again. Mm-hmm. And knowing that that's the kind of God who has asked you to do something, it's a pretty good motivator. Mm-hmm.
So what are some teen things that could have stood in his way?
Isaac,
yeah. His love for his son, his only son. Not thinking that, you know, that he can do it, God's promises his way.
I imagine also,
go ahead.
Sorry, also just death. I mean, everything he had observed about death was, up to that point, was, that's it. And that was his seen experience with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also have evidence that Abraham was a pretty wealthy man. Like, he had no lack of animals that he could have sacrificed to God if he had chosen to go that route instead of sacrificing his son. He had options.
He did that.
Right. And he regularly sacrificed his animals. So, like, he had no, other than what God said, he had no reason to sacrifice Isaac. He had other options,
which, like,
obviously would have been
supported. I would say too, I'm not sure if this is technically seen, but like kind of human reason, like if you're around people who are doing child sacrifice and you're like, oh, that's horrible, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have this kind of idea of like, that's wrong, that's immoral, and then all of a sudden God asks you to do it.
Yeah. That's a strange thing that through the Old Testament we see people sacrificing their son, you know, wow, it's terrible. But here is God asking Abraham to do that.
I think another thing, Isaac himself, didn't fight back, didn't,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he kind of mentions sort of calmly, like, hey man, what's going on?
Yeah, where's the sacrifice?
But yeah. I, you know, his father says, no, don't worry about it, it's going to be okay.
And he ties him up.
Yeah, so. I don't know what that stuff, like, signifies, but it's something.
And, you know, Sarah and Abraham initially came up with a backup plan for God, whereas in this instance, Abraham learned his lesson and didn't need a backup plan. He said, God will provide.
Yeah.
I think the emotions stirred by the anticipation of journeying for at least 3 days to go make this sacrifice would have been pretty hard. You had all that time to think about it, walk right next to his son, you know, that's, and those emotional things, although they're, you can't see emotions, they are certainly things that are, that seem real to us, more than the unseen things.
Maybe there's a point that he left everyone else behind and went to Isaac.
Yeah. I don't know if that made it easier or harder.
He said, maybe these people are going to hold me back.
Could be.
I need to go by myself.
Yeah.
So now going to our thought questions, kind of relating this all back to us and our promises. So what are some promises that we have by God?
Salvation. Mm-hmm.
I've kind of went through it. I did promises that related to his promises. So we have an inheritance. I think we have a land promise in the kingdom of heaven. You know, we're promised a city, just like Abraham was seeking. We're promised to be children of God, God's people, and in that seed to be saved through Jesus through sin. So what do our promises call us to do?
Obey in a similar way.
Yeah.
Abraham obeyed God's commands.
They call us to to be different. I like that Ephesians, where it talks about the calling, and it says, a calling to walk the Christian walk and to be imitators of God. I think that would be the obedience of God, like you were mentioning. And then, how do our promises call us to be sojourners in this world?
To look for the city, and that's our focus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The eternal city.
Yeah.
Somebody said earlier about, like, Abraham leaving his house and that being, like, your security. Mm-hmm. So, we have to do that. It kind of seems like those things that make us feel secure.
Yeah, I kind of said, you know, acting different, not settling for this world, kind of in that situation of not settling for a permanent, but, you know, believing in God, seeking something better, living in the tent. What do we do that is different from the world? A lot of our actions, in those two passages, Ephesians talking about the putting off the old self, and then Galatians, what Sewell mentioned in his sermon, you know, we have the stuff of the flesh that we use to fuel the flesh, and then we have stuff that we use to fuel the spirit, and kind of two different actions that are separate. And then, are there things we receive when we trust in God and His promises? Yeah, now or later. I think we know that God is faithful. We see that through Sarah, that God's faithful. So we know that in the future He's going to be faithful to His promises. And we know now that we'll have security and that He would answer prayers. And then how should we remind ourselves of our promises from God?
Sing about it.
Fellowship, prayer, meditation, study. What we're doing here now, why we came tonight, what they're doing over there.
You mentioned earlier that the value to Him and the promises being repeated. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of the reason why we do some of those things and why we're studying and our reading, because those are reminders of the same promises. We keep stumbling across one more passage, one more place where we're reassured this is the promise, this is what God's holding forth for us.
Yeah, the importance of keep on studying.
Yeah. And because the things that we see are often very strong, you know, mm-hmm. in our minds, in our lives, and, you know, often they're different from the promises. Oh, things are so difficult, or, you know, just different challenges that we have, or wondering about, you know, these promises of eternal life and everything, and, you know, we see the limitations of life, and so with those things being so strong, you know, in our minds and in our lives, and reminders of that there are things beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Are very important.
And knowing that there's something better beyond.
Yeah.
And then how are we tested when we follow God? Yeah. Are there choices that we're supposed to make? Matthew 6:24, where it's talking about choosing a master. Are we going to choose wealth of this world or choose God? No. Are we going to go through life? Maybe there's times we're persecuted or hated or slandered against. And what do we have to offer to God because of our faith or our fear in Him?
Help spread His kingdom. Be workers for
Him. Yeah. So offering ourselves to Him to be the vessel for which He does that by. So things I just came up with were our bodies or our possessions, know, ourselves giving up the things of this world, you know, choosing not this world. But in
learning not to be there. More than giving them up, learning somehow to not be attracted to, not hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like in Mark 8, it says, is he to gain the whole world but to lose his soul? You know, there's some, there's gains, we're not supposed to gain the world, but follow Christ. I know there's some application questions. If you want to think about this on yourself, since this is one of the objectives we had, you can think to yourself, maybe write down a few things, maybe some stuff that you need to work on this week of how we need to act like Abraham and Sarah and act in the unseen rather than just relying on the seen and how like